Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. This is your host, Andrew Vitelli, the news editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in today. Our guest today is Don Dmitrovich, the Senior Managing Director and Portfolio Manager for Energy Infrastructure Credit at Nuveen. Don, thank you for joining Crossroads.
Andrew, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So Don, most of my listeners are probably familiar with Nuveen, but for those who aren't, can you talk a little bit about your firm and where it fits in the infrastructure and energy sector?
Andrew, so Nuveen is an asset manager. We manage approximately $1.2 trillion in assets. And in infrastructure, Nuveen's had a long and storied history, having invested in the space for close to 40 years. In total, Nuveen private infrastructure as an asset class across debt and equity strategies, we manage over $30 billion in capital. And I joined Nuveen approximately a year and a half ago to build a broad-based energy and power credit-focused strategy.
And Don, where were you before joining Nuveen, and what's your background in this industry?
So I've been involved in energy and power, broadly speaking, for the last quarter century. First, my educational background is I'm a chemical engineer, worked as a product development engineer in industry, and then practiced law for a few years before joining Citigroup on the principal investing side. And there, I ultimately oversaw an energy and power credit strategy, investing across both sustainable energy and in traditional energy. And then ultimately went on to found an energy and power vertical at a firm called Highbridge, which ultimately spun off into the fund HPS Investment Partners, and was there for about a decade where we invested close to $10 billion before I left to join Nuveen.
So you've seen a lot of changes and evolution in the energy markets over your time in the sector.
Yes, no question. It's been interesting. So over the 25 years, we first started investing in part of the energy transition in onshore wind, and obviously saw the proliferation of that for a number of years, and then, you know, the continuation of that theme with solar projects and the proliferation of solar as a renewable generation strategy. And more recently, we've witnessed energy storage really coming to life over the last several years.
So Don, before this call, I reread an article or white paper that you published a couple months ago called The Solar Coaster, which, by the way, is a catchy name. And it's about some of the challenges that the renewable industry is facing. And while these headwinds probably won't be news to anyone who's followed the industry, like increased cost of capital, supply chain issues, I think our listeners would be interested in hearing just how these trends have impacted the sector in your view and in the view of your firm.
Sure, Andrew. Happy to speak to that. I think the overarching theme of seeing the growth in renewable generation over the last several years, I think that is continuing. And we're seeing the resurgence of renewable generation across, whether it's wind, solar, and obviously complementary asset classes like energy storage. So I think from a macro perspective, and if you take a look at just the stats around the growth in renewable generation, that all continues and is fairly pronounced. I think the thing we wanted to note was, while you've got this macro backdrop that's quite constructive and obviously facilitated by legislation like the Inflation Reduction Act here in the US, at the same time, there are some headwinds that are delaying projects. And you touched on a couple key themes that I think are incredibly important: cost of capital and the elevated rate environment that we're currently experiencing has a pronounced impact on renewable generation projects because of their capital intensity. A significant portion of the cost of those projects is really reliant on having access to low-cost capital. And as rates have gone up, it's challenged some of these projects. So that's one headwind. Two, the supply chain disruptions that started in COVID and frankly are continuing in the sector are something certainly project developers are acutely aware of. And it's placing significant pressure on project development. And obviously, as there's a need for increased power, the delay in some of these projects is compounding some of the challenges we're seeing with grid stability. And then when you factor in inflation and labor costs, that's another headwind that developers are feeling. And as we look to ultimately investing in these projects, it's something we're focused on to make sure that the project, all the cost contingencies, take that into account.
And it seems like we're not hearing as much about supply chain issues as we were 2 years ago, but it is still a concern. Where does that stand from your view? Has it gotten better? Is it in the right direction? Or is it just something that the industry has gotten used to?
It's a great question. I think certainly in some instances, we're seeing that some of the supply chain issues that were really part of COVID have actually waned away a bit. But in other instances, such as transformers and breakers, the delays that we were experiencing back then, I think, continue. And in some instances, we're actually seeing it become more acute. So breakers, which are a fundamental part of getting these projects online, there are delays up to 4 years. And obviously, that will get remedied over time. But in the current situation, I think there are a lot of projects that we're seeing that were expected to come online and achieve COD within, call it 6 to 9 months, have now been pushed back in some cases as much as a year from the original expectations. So while some of the equipment issues and just the shipping and logistics issues that were prevalent in COVID have been addressed, some of the specific component and equipment manufacturing issues or shortages are still ongoing.
And what's the solution to this? I know the Inflation Reduction Act, one of its aims was to bring some of that manufacturing offshore, but that's something nobody expects to happen overnight. So in the meantime, what are the solutions?
The short answer is there's no magic bullet here where these issues get resolved quickly. I think there's obviously a focus on increasing manufacturing of whether it's transformers, breakers, some of the other components. But at the same time, I think the reality is we're in this longer term trajectory where projects will get developed. It's not going to happen as quick as I think the market expected. And frankly, the need for that power, if anything, is actually accelerating because we're seeing significant power demand growth, whether it's a function of the data crunching that comes from all the AI activity, the proliferation of data centers that are just significant consumers of power. We don't have a quick fix as it relates to renewable generation. And while a lot of capital is being, you know, invested, we think part of the solution also comes from conventional power, which can ultimately serve some of that short to medium term supply challenges.
Yeah, when you look at the energy needs that are going to come from AI data centers, it's really staggering. And it seems like we're in the early innings of that. So the need to increase energy, I think, is really beyond what many people are thinking about. Would you agree?
Without question. I think in the last few months, we've certainly seen a number of utilities materially increase their power demand growth projections. And I think that in turn is causing an acute awareness within folks in the industry here, where there's clearly the demand side is there and increasing. And I think the expectation is, to your point, it is the early innings. If you think about how much data processing is required as AI really starts to pick up, you know, one estimate that I've heard is if you look at a typical AI search function platform like ChatGPT, the amount of power required to complete that search is anywhere 10 to 20 times that of a traditional Google search. And so you start to extrapolate those numbers and the power demand that entails is significant under any metric. And that juxtaposed to the supply side, like we just talked about, where renewable generation has some headwinds because of the supply chain issues, the regulatory issues in terms of getting new projects approved, the cost of capital issues, all that is causing delays in renewable generation. You're seeing developers And we're certainly seeing a lot of opportunities come back to conventional power as a part of the short to medium term solution. Obviously, depending on your frame of reference, there's some that are very focused on the energy transition and decarbonization, and they worry that going back to conventional sources of power generation, sets us back. I think the challenge, of course, is in an ideal world, renewable generation would fill that void. But given the delays we've just talked about, conventional power seems like a bridge to addressing the power demand growth that we're seeing.
And is the industry receptive to that? Are there investors who have said we're only going to do renewables and now are saying, hey, we understand the role that conventional power must have in the market? Or is there still an aversion from large swaths of the market that will be needed?
I think we're at an interesting point, Andrew, where there are some investors that recognize that we need an all energy supply solution, which includes conventional power. And then you have those investors and managers that are really committed to a decarbonization strategy that are looking to non-fossil fuels power generation. And so I think the pendulum has swung a little bit. If you think back 2 years ago, I think the notion of even considering conventional power generation as part of the supply side solution was probably, it was just a distinct minority of investors that were willing to consider that. As we sit here today and are faced with significant power generation demand issues and the growth in that, I think you're seeing some investors saying, okay, we're going to take a pragmatic approach here and not be dogmatic and look at conventional power, and obviously making sure that from a responsible investing perspective, that we try and limit CO2 emissions from those power generating sources. But I think there are some investors now that are willing to consider it, whereas 2 years ago, that would have been a very distinct minority of investors. So the pendulum has swung back a little bit, and that's partially a result of the practical implications of seeing this type of power demand growth and the need to satisfy it. No one, and certainly whether it's utilities or the broader energy and power complex, no investor wants to see a situation where there are power shortages and brownouts in any market. And the reality is, if you take a look at some of the projections that people are using 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, unless we find new sources of power generation, we could face those types of shortages down the road.
And when you talk about conventional power, are you mostly talking about gas-fired peakers? I know that Alaska is talking about procuring another coal plant, but I don't see that generally being on the horizon. Are we mainly talking about peaker plants?
Andrew, yes. I think the vast majority of conventional power investments that we're seeing are nat gas. Peakers, there's some situations where potentially a combined cycle can make sense in terms of some baseload production, but most of it is really meant to address the peak demand circumstances and really is meant to play a stabilization role as we see, increased renewable generation, some of the intermittency issues that come from that. And obviously, energy storage is part of the solution there, but conventional peakers that are fueled by nat gas is the other set of investment opportunities that we're seeing right now.
So, Don, what role do you see Nuveen play in solving some of these problems?
Nuveen is actually, from a strategic focus, has identified the infrastructure as an asset class at a general level as being a key strategic focus. And in particular, the strategy that we've been building here for the past 2 years, focusing on energy and power is one of the core areas in infrastructure that requires capital. Nuveen has basically said, this is an area that we as a firm want to focus on. We've identified that there's a significant need for capital. And the type of capital solutions we're providing are flexible private capital that are meant to address some of the issues that we're seeing in the market today, whether it's given cost of capital issues, delays, and inflationary pressures. By us being able to provide a bespoke capital solution that allows the project owners to develop these projects and ultimately bring them to completion is where our focus lies. And so Naveen as an institution is very focused on helping facilitate that investment. And we've been building a team here at Naveen. We now have 12 investment professionals as part of my team, really looking to focus on this area. We've identified it both in terms of growth and just the need for capital. And the firm has recently issued an equilibrium survey that showed that a lot of our clients on the investor side have identified infrastructure as an area that they'd like to invest in. So it's complementary both in terms of having a very constructive market that needs this capital and an investor base that wants to invest in infrastructure assets.
So in light of all this, in light of the challenges that the renewable sector is facing, we're almost 2 years from 2 year anniversary from the signing of the Inflation Reduction Act. How successful do you think that's been as a piece of legislation?
Andrew, I think the Inflation Reduction Act has had both positives and some negatives. From an overarching perspective, the legislation has achieved its core objective, which is really to create the right investment environment for investors to deploy capital and ultimately help decarbonize the economy. The incentives are there, and I think the investor community has been very receptive to investing, whether it's in renewable generation, energy storage, looking at carbon capture as a way to reduce CO2 emissions, and the onshoring of the infrastructure supply chain. I think from an investor perspective, the overarching goals of the Inflation Reduction Act have been very supportive. The challenge has really been in the implementation. One, the regulations took longer to really document and provide clarity for investors on how to make those investments. And two, just given the overriding cost of capital environment and some of the delays that we talked about earlier, that's made you really utilizing all the carrots and the incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act more challenging. And so as we sit here today, the framework makes the U.S. clearly one of the more desirable markets to invest for decarbonization and the energy transition. And yet the actual dollars deployed relative to expectations have probably been a little slower than I think most of us would have expected.
And what happens if there's a new administration taking office 9 months from now? Is that going to really slow down the progress on renewables that's been made? Or are these laws already into effect and really it'll just be around the edges?
We've been giving a lot of thought to this. And obviously, from an investment perspective, we're thinking not just in terms of the immediate term, but just really how the legislation may change as a result of potential elections over the course of several years. I think there are a couple of key things to note. One, when you take a look at the actual invested dollars, the majority of those capital investments have gone into red states, whether it's the Southeast, states like West Virginia or Texas. And so as we sit here and think about a potential election outcome where Republicans control the White House and potentially the other branches of government, we think the actual changes that could apply are really isolated to certain aspects of the Inflation Reduction Act. In other words, the changes may be in relation to some of the incentives, perhaps around EV credits and some of the newer technology credits. But when you take a look at the core incentives, we think those are unlikely to change. And in particular, if you think about the 45X manufacturing credits, we think those are likely to stay regardless of which party ultimately controls the presidency or the other branches of government. I think the key aspect for investors is just having some certainty of outcome. My guess is you're going to see some delay in investments being made until after the election results are clear. And so as we go into the second half of the year, I think you'll see a slowdown, but then I think you'll see a resurgence on the back end and into next year as people become more comfortable that the outlier events or fears around the Inflation Reduction Act being completely rescinded, as those concerns really become more mute, or there's clarity that that's not a risk, you'll see a sort of a continuation of the investment trends we've been seeing over the last year.
Well, interesting stuff. Thank you for that, Don. And I'm afraid I think we are just about out of time. But for anybody who's interested in hearing more, reading more about Don's thoughts, I recommend reading the paper, The Solar Coaster. You can just Google Nuveen Solar Coaster. It'll come up. It's available to anyone, Don, correct?
That's correct. Do a search and then log on to the Nuveen site. You should be able to access it.
Okay, great. Well, I recommend that as reading for anybody interested in this. Well, Don, thank you so much for coming on the program and sharing your thoughts.
Andrew, really appreciated the invitation and have enjoyed our conversation and look forward to continuing it down the road.
Absolutely, likewise. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player, and please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.